from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. October baseball. If you're a fan, this is the best of times. And if you're a Bay Area baseball fan, it's the best of times squared, because both the Giants and the improbable A's are heading for the postseason. On Saturday, the A's take on Detroit and the Giants host Cincinnati. And get this, the games are on TV back-to-back. In the hour ahead, we'll preview the playoffs, whether there's any chance that a Bay Bridge World Series might be in the offing, and we'll talk about what each team means to the city it calls home. Well, in the A's case, sort of home. That's ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Before the baseball season began, not much was expected of the Oakland A's, so it wasn't a surprise that by midseason they were 13 games out of first place. But it turns out there was no cause for worry. After all, the A's had one rookie pitcher who was a converted first baseman, a third baseman who was a converted catcher, and two more rookie pitchers who'd sold shoes in the offseason. The A's took us on one of those wild rides that only baseball can provide and charged their way to the top. And while the A's ownership has given new meaning to the phrase, Occupy Oakland, by season's end, Oakland occupied first place and were headed to the playoffs. And oh yes, by the way, the Giants are going to the playoffs too. And so as the postseason begins, we take up the story of Bay Area baseball, wild improbability on one side of the Bay, steady, sure success on the other, and the tantalizing prospect that the two could meet in a Bay Bridge World Series at month's end. Joining us to take up baseball in October, Marty Lurie, Giants pregame and postgame host on KNBR 680. Marty, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
And Killian joins us as well, sports columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, former contributing writer to Sports Illustrated. And good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you join us. And Ken Korick joins us as well, the play-by-play man for the Oakland A's, joining us from Comerica Field in Detroit. So excited that he's there 26 hours before the game starts. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun.
It is indeed. So what, Ken Korick, is the most amazing part of the A's story? They were down by five with nine games to go, made it to first, something no team has ever done before. The list of improbabilities goes on and on and on. What to you is just the most striking thing about the A's success?
Well, I think one of the things is there's the perception that this is an overnight thing, but the A's have the best record in baseball since the 2nd of June. So I think a lot of people have jumped on board the A's bandwagon here late, especially in the national media. But for 4 months, they've had the best record in the game. So it's been a great story. There are a lot of wonderful different stories on this team. It's been really an ensemble effort, I think, by the Athletics. And it has come out of nowhere. I don't think anybody could have expected it.
And if you could attribute it to one particular thing, is there a one thing? Is it Bob Melvin? Is it the amazing Billy Beane? Is it those rookie pitchers? I mean, is there a key to it?
Well, like I said, I think you can't do what the A's did and win 94 games and do something historic, which, as you said, it's come back from 13 games out at the end of June. It starts with the front office at the very top. It's, you know, everybody shares in the success. I think Bob Melvin has done a phenomenal job. I think one of the greatest managing jobs maybe in the history of the game, although these things are hard to quantify. But, I mean, if you break it down strictly to a baseball perspective, their bullpen has been outstanding, and they hit for power. I think their numbers, if people look at their overall offensive numbers, they're not very good, but they hit for a great deal of power, second most home runs in the American League after the All-Star break. And down the stretch, their bullpen was lights out. Grant Balfour pitched five consecutive games at the end, the same with Ryan Cook. And they're a gritty, tough club. There are a lot of intangibles that have led them to where they are now. And things have to kind of come out of nowhere. It has been a storybook season, 14 walk-off wins. And so a lot of that momentum and belief in the clubhouse built, I think, back in June.
Ken Korick, joining us from Comerica Park in Detroit, where the Oakland A's will take on the Detroit Tigers tomorrow. And Killian, Ken said that, you know, the national media has just sort of recently discovered this story, but it hasn't been an overnight phenomenon. They've been playing great baseball for the last 3-4 months. But in some ways, it's also a discovery for people living on the San Francisco side of the Bay, not just the national media. I think a lot of San Francisco Giants fans, and I'd count myself among them, just sort of woke up to this story in the last few days. What do you make of sort of the way the overall Bay Area is reacting to this?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. It's not just the national media that's late to the party here. It's kind of all of us. And I think in part, I mean, certainly not Ken. He's been watching it unfold every day. And to a certain degree, so have I as a sports writer in the Bay Area. But you know, the last couple of years with the A's, they've had a lot of talent. Billy, you know, whatever you think about Billy Beane, he is fantastic at his job. He's almost too good at his job. He gets great talent. And, you know, they've had good talent. They've had little runs before where they've gotten into contention, and then they've faded, or they've had these incredible injury years where they've just had guys on the disabled list over and over again. So I think it's still, even though they were playing so well, I think everyone was still kind of looking at it with a skeptical eye, because to me the most amazing thing about the A's is this is completely by accident. You know, this is they tore their team apart, took it down to the foundation, and were going to rebuild it for some time in the future when they would have a theoretical new stadium somewhere. And so the fact that these guys that Billy got, you know, he traded away the people that we had just started to get to know, guys like Gio Gonzalez, and traded them for a bunch of unknowns, and then all of a sudden these guys that nobody even knows who they are, you can't keep the lineup straight, you know, and even in, you know, by the All-Star break, you're still trying to figure out who are these guys, and they catch fire, and I really do think, I mean, Billy was standing in the champagne celebration on Wednesday with a look of amazement on his face.
Yeah,
he didn't expect this. No one expected it. So it's not just the San Francisco fans or the national media. It's. I think there's a lot of shock inside the organization.
Within the organization itself. Marty Lurie, let's bring you into this. You're with the Giants, pregame, postgame host for the Giants, but you have a history with the A's as well, having worked in that same capacity on that side of the Bay. Do you concur with Ann's point that among those shocked, along with the national media, is the ownership of the A's and the management of the A's?
Well, I think so. When we stood there in spring training assessing this ball club, they had one player, Manny Ramirez, and he wasn't going to play for 50 days. And then all of a sudden it started to come together. Timing in life is everything. It's the same story in baseball. The traditional powers of the American League had off years, from the Yankees, really,
and
on
Red
down
Sox.
To the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, even the Angels. And the Rangers really never clicked the entire year. The A's did two things. One, they're in a league where home runs matter, and they hit home runs. They discovered a player, we call him Superman, and that is Cespedes. I can't imagine what other major league scouts didn't see in him, and that's a great credit to the Oakland scouts who signed Cespedes. He's terrific.
And just one more beat on the ownership question. There is this sort of theory that the A's traded away their all-star pitchers, stripped down to the bare bones, as Ann suggests, with the idea of we don't mind being terrible for a while because that's going to make the case that we have to move. So is this Lou Wolf's worst nightmare?
I think so. I really do. Just to finish up very quickly on the other thought, they pitch in a league where pitching is important. And in midseason, and I told the captain, Ken Korak, I said, look, this team is pitching. Only the Devil Rays, the Rays, are pitching any better. So they had home runs and they had pitching. All right. This is a fairy tale. This should have been written by Hans Christian Andersen. They should have Danny Kaye playing Bob Melvin. Baseball has been hidden and suppressed in the tower for 5 or 6 years now by the A's ownership as they try to suppress the team to some degree, looking for a stadium at San Jose. And all of a sudden, baseball became alive. And the prince kissed Snow White, and the little bunnies are jumping around, and the birds are flying, and it's in Technicolor again. It's a great baseball story. And yes, I think to some degree, it's probably a little disconcerting to Lou Wolf and John Fisher, because fans are coming out again. They could take the tarps off, and you can get 50,000 people out there again. So the fans are in the East Bay, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful baseball story.
Marty Lurie, Giants pregame and postgame host, joining us along with Ann Killian of the San Francisco Chronicle and Ken Korak, the play-by-play announcer for the Oakland A's. We'll get to the Giants, I promise, Giants fans, but I do want to ask a little bit more about Bob Melvin. Ken Korak mentioned that he really has had this spectacular year. And I'd love to hear both of you, both Ann and Marty, chime in on this as well. Bob Melvin wasn't successful when he was the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks or in Seattle. Was he just the right guy, Marty Lurie, at the right time? Did he have a special rapport with these kind of unknown young ball players? What made that magic happen?
Yeah, I think so. The key to a manager is managing men, so to speak, and he's an expert at it. And he's grown up, as many people do. Bruce Bochy the same way over the years is a different manager than he was 10 years ago. Melvin has that knack of handling people, and he did a good job of it. He's very patient. And don't forget, it's always the manager who follows the last manager and the difference. And there's a major difference between Bob Guerin and Bob Melvin. And I think Bob Melvin gets a tremendous amount of credit here. Curt Young, the pitching coach, comes back. He gets run out of Boston because of all that went on there, comes back and develops the best pitching staff in the American League. So the staff did a good job, but the manager is the key. And yes, I agree. I think he did a great job.
How much of this, Ann, and then back to you, Ken, is a question of chemistry? Bob Melvin's role in that, but also some of the players, Johnny Gomes and the others, that seem to have created, as you wrote in this morning's Chronicle, Ann Killian, a little bit of the Giants from 2010.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of parallels to the 2010 Giants, and that's why I think the A's could be very dangerous in the playoffs. Is, you know, there's something to be said for riding momentum into the playoffs, which is what the Giants did in 2010. They clinched the division on the very last day, just like the A's did, not in quite as improbable a way, but still, they were chasing the whole way down the stretch. They had a, you know, go for it mentality that kept them loose, and you know, they were young. They didn't really feel the pressure. They were kind of wacky, kind of like the A's are. And so there is, you know, that kind of forms a kind of chemistry. And in the same way as the Giants in 2010, this team has kind of come together on the fly. It's not like they knew each other before the season started or even at the All-Star break. You know, they've all kind of gelled at the right time. And that's a formidable kind of force in sports. And I also do think that Bob Melvin, I mean, the thing I really love about Bob Melvin as a native, as someone who grew up here, you know, he gets it. He gets the A's. He gets their legacy. He embraces it. He understands that Oakland, that you know, it might not be the prettiest stadium in the world, but it has housed some of the most fantastic moments in baseball history. And stop pushing that away. Stop pretending it didn't happen. Embrace it. Bob Melvin, as a kid, was there for those great World Series teams in the 70s. He was there at Day on the Green concerts, you know, watching The Who. He was there, you know, watching Billy Ball sneaking away from Cal when he was supposed to be in class. I mean, he gets the whole thing, and that I can't understate the importance of that in making, you know, connecting with a fan base, connecting with a team, connecting with its legacy. I mean, it's a very intangible thing, but I think it's so important. And he also has completely disproved Billy Beane's theory that was expounded in Moneyball and has been on display all through Billy's tenure as the general manager. Managers do matter.
Yeah, and they really
matter. Yeah. And Bob Guerin always had talented teams. Those guys have gone on to be stars elsewhere. He couldn't get them to win.
Yeah.
So the manager does matter.
And Ken Korak, give us your sort of bird's eye view of what makes this team special, the relationships that you've seen in the clubhouse, on the plane ride to Detroit, for that matter.
Well, I think one thing I should say, too, as far as Melvin and his past history managing is concerned, it wasn't like it was a disaster in his two previous stops. He did manage the Mariners to 93 wins in his first year there, and he took the Diamondbacks to the postseason 5 years ago, and ultimately he was let go from both of those jobs. But there are a lot of great managers who have been fired, so he's not the first one.
Yeah,
but
fair point.
He does an excellent job of, I think there may be a fine line in allowing the players to be themselves and allow their personalities to come out. He got pied in the face after the game on Monday by Josh Reddick.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the Tigers are going to put a pie in the face of Jim Leland. And Billy Beane got pied on Wednesday, but yet also has the ability to have this ball club mesh and for them to play hard and to have them buy into what he wants them to do. There are several players who are platooning on this team who I'm sure everybody wants to play every day, but and I guess you can say that it's easy to say a team has good chemistry when they're winning, but they've really bought into the team concept on this club. There's no selfishness, and I think that's been a very special thing with this club. There are a lot of managers who are good in the clubhouse, but they're not good on the field. Bob Melvin is great with the strategy of the game, but he's also great in managing the clubhouse. And if you were to go down there, I think all 25 guys would say they have the utmost respect for him, and that's extremely rare in this game. And you mentioned Johnny Gomes. He has been, I think, kind of a spiritual leader, almost the guru of the team.
The pride of Petaluma.
The pride of Petaluma, Casa Grande High School, which is where I actually started broadcasting high school games about, you know, 7 or 8 decades ago, it seems. But so he's been a real inspirational leader. So they've had a good blend of veterans. Grant Balfour was down this road before in 2008 with one of the most amazingly surprising teams in the history of the game, the Tampa Bay Rays. So the right mix of veterans, I think, and young players, and they've been immune to the pressure. People have talked about, would they succumb to the pressure of September? It just hasn't happened.
Ken Korek, the play-by-play man for the Oakland A's, joining us from Detroit this morning. We will, Ken, stay with us as long as you can. We're gonna transition for a bit over to the Giants, but we want to come back to actual baseball and what to look forward to in the games that start tomorrow. But let's make a parallel transition, if we would, and talk manager to manager, Marty Lurie and Bruce Bochy of the Giants, longtime successful manager in San Diego, also now here in San Francisco. He doesn't have, it would seem, the kind of, you know, personal touch that a Bob Melvin might, but describe him and his ability to work with the players that he has.
Sure. Very strong leader, takes care of the players publicly, never derides a player in public. Good game manager. There's been so much adversity on the Giants this year, and he never complained about it. He never lost his focus. I mean, this is a ball club that the manager really made a difference.
See that particular, sorry to interrupt,
sure,
when the Melky Cabrera incident happened?
Oh, absolutely.
That was a time when a manager really mattered.
Absolutely. He had to galvanize the team at that point. They could have fallen apart, but Angel Pagan stood up, Scudero stood up, Scudero turned into Melky Cabrera. He had 360 the rest of the way. But when you look back on what Bochy had to deal with here coming out of spring training, his first baseman turned out to be a second baseman who had an anxiety attack and was lost really for the season.
Aubrey Huff.
Second baseman never played all year long. The third baseman had some weight issues, among other personal issues. The left fielder was suspended in August. He was leading the league in hitting. The center fielder has had the career season. They had a trade for a right fielder. The catcher, you didn't know if he's going to play 2 days a week or 4 days a week. Led the league in hitting and he'll be the MVP. And his closer has a beard that you wonder what's living in it. And other than that, everything else was fine.
Who was also out for the year, and your Cy Young Award winner has his worst season.
Exactly. So with that, Bochy kept the ship afloat. As I've said, it's like the cattle boss who's on the drive. He gets them through all the things that happen and brings them out at the end of the season. And that's what he did. He kept the ship afloat and kept the focus on baseball with all the things that happened. I told him, and I think it's his finest managing job ever, to overcome these things. I think that's part of why the A's story was a little bit subdued, because every time we turned around, the Giants story had another twist to it.
And Killian, do you think both Bob Melvin and Bruce Bochy, I mean, obviously they're candidates for manager of the year. Will they get those honors?
No, they won't. I think those honors will go to the other two-team market that's in the playoffs and in the great Washington Baltimore Metroplex. I think both the Nationals and the Orioles, they are great stories as well, and they happen to be on the East Coast, and we know that there is indeed such a thing as East Coast bias. I think Bochy, you know, I think we can appreciate his job here more. I think nationally people look at the Giants and they look at their pitching staff and they look at Buster having an MVP season, and they don't understand, you know, the ins and outs and the trials and tribulations day to day of what Bochy went through. And I also think that there's a little bit of resentment that about the Milky thing, that there's a little perception that maybe the Giants got into first place in a not a completely ethical way. I mean, you know, which is ridiculous. You can talk about that in a million different ways. But I do think there's a little bit of that lingering perception nationally. But I think, and I don't think Bob Melvin will win. I think Buck Showalter will probably win, the Baltimore Orioles manager, because they, too, have just been about as, I mean, they've been worse for far longer than the A's have. They, I've forgotten how long it's been since they've been in the playoffs. But I do think, for all the reasons we mentioned before, that Bob Melvin does deserve it. And I think it'll be a very close vote, but I think, I don't think either one of them will get the award. And I don't think either one of them really cares. What they really would like to do is keep playing many, many days in the month of October and into November.
Let's talk a little bit about the games on Saturday and what we should each be watching for. Giants first, then A's. Marty Lurie on the Giants side. Matt Cain, of course, is the starting pitcher. The Reds are going with a very good pitcher as well. Keys to the game?
Key is pitching. As Ken will tell you and Ann will tell you, this time of year, pitching, pitching, pitching. And you need the one guy who can carry you through, whether it's Dave Stewart or Marichal or John Smoltz or Jack Morris. You need that one guy. And the Giants did that in 2010. So they looked to Matt Cain to be that guy. He's had a couple of rough outings against the Reds. Cueto's always given the Giants trouble. The Reds handled the Giants rather easily this year, but for a couple of late-inning heroics, they would have won 6 of 7. I say it's pitching. And Matt Cain is the key for me in the first game. Cueto is tough. It'll be a low-scoring game, but Cain has to come out and set the tone for the series.
And Ken Korak in Detroit, the last I looked, the A's hadn't even announced their starting pitcher for Game 1. Do you know any more about that? Where does that stand?
I think it's going to be Jarrett Parker. They haven't announced it yet. The team bus is leaving the hotel at 2 o'clock to come down here to the ballpark, and then there'll be the press conferences that you normally have the day before the first game. My guess is they're going to go with Jarrett Parker in Game 1, Tommy Malone in Game 2. If he's healthy, Brett Anderson in the third game, and maybe A.J. Griffin in the fourth game. But again, I don't want to be premature in announcing that because they haven't made that official yet. So we'll wait and see if that happens. Obviously, for the A's, it's a very difficult matchup against Justin Verlander. And one of the interesting and unique things about the postseason this year is that you can argue whether or not the team that has home field advantage really does. The A's are the number 2 seed in the American League, and so they're playing the Tigers on the road here. They're the number 3 seed. You play 2 games in Detroit and then 3 in Oakland. Now, the A's will have home field if they can get a split here. But there are people in baseball who think, you know, hey, it's not a bad idea. Even if you're the lower seed, you get to play the first 2 games at home. And the Tigers have outstanding pitching. And like Marty said, that's really what it boils down to in the postseason. And so the A's are matching up against someone who a lot of people in the game will say is the best pitcher in the game, and that's Justin Verlander tomorrow night.
And what about in terms of how the kind of baseball the A's play? How does that suit that park? We have to go to a break, but just a real quick synopsis of that, Ken?
Well, the A's have only played 3 games here this year, and they lost 2 out of 3. They did win the last game, and they were just here recently. It's a big ballpark. I think if you're a pitcher and you can keep the ball to the big part of the park, center field, left center, right center, it's a tough park for home run hitters. But if you can pull the ball, Miguel Cabrera won a triple crown, hit 44 home runs playing his game here, half his games here. So I think it'll suit the A's fine. I think one of the things the A's will have to do with their speed game, and Coco Crisp didn't play when the A's were here on the A's last road trip, and he's a dynamic force when he gets on base, the 39 stolen bases. The Tigers, if they have a weakness, it's their infield defense.
All right,
they don't
we'll
have
hold
a lot of range, so maybe the A's can take advantage of that.
Okay, Ken, thanks, and stay with us if you can. We have to take a short break. We'll take your calls. Anything you want to know about the A's and the Giants, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. This is Forum on Baseball at KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Baseball, October baseball in particular, is our topic during this hour of Forum. The A's somehow, some way, have made it to first place and into the playoffs. They will take on Detroit at Detroit. Tomorrow, the Giants, led for a long time, finished comfortably out in front. They will take on their opponent, the Cincinnati Reds, at home at AT&T Ballpark tomorrow. We'd love to hear your comments and questions about this. What would you like to know about the game? Do you think this will make a difference for the A's? Will they now perhaps be able to stay in Oakland? If you're an Oaklander and a supporter of the A's, what do you feel about the A's astonishing story this year and whether or not that will be a motivation to stay in that particular city? We'd love to hear from you at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Who are your favorite ballplayers on these teams? Who are the keys? Who has to do well in the postseason if either the A's or the Giants are going to succeed? 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. You mentioned before the break, Ken Korick, about Coco Crisp, and a lot of people think he's been one of the real keys to the A's. I was looking up the statistics. The A's don't have a batter who's batting over 300. Cespedes is batting 292. Coco Crisp is batting 259. So how is he so central? Describe what isn't told by those numbers.
Well, it's a great question. You know, the A's team batting average is one of the lowest in the history of baseball for a team that's made the postseason. But those numbers with Coco are a little bit skewed because he really struggled in the first half of the season. He was hurt a little bit, spent some time on the DL, and then he was batting second and also playing in left field. When he reclaimed his spot in center field and also went back to leading off, his average over that stretch has been somewhere pretty close to 300. So he is a catalyst for the club and had a huge hit down the right field line as part of the A's comeback in the game on Wednesday against Texas. As I said, 39 stolen bases. He's a very good defensive outfielder. And Marty and Ann will remember this. There's a certain parallel, I think, to the 2001 A's team, which I think was, you know, maybe the best team since I've been with the club over 17 years. And there was a point during that year when the A's switched Terrence Long and Johnny Damon. And Damon became the center fielder. Long went to left field. And that happened this year with Cespedes now playing left and Crisp in center and Reddick in right. And I think one of the underrated aspects of the A's team is that all three of those outfielders can play center field. And so they have a very it's an outstanding and I think underrated defensive outfield.
Ken Korick joining us from Comerica Park in Detroit. And Killian, as you look at the Giants, who are their keys? Is there a ball player that you think has to really step up if they're going to advance in the postseason?
Yeah, I mean we know that their keys, who their keys are, who their leaders are, Buster Posey, Matt Cain. I think there's a big question mark on the back end of the pitching staff, actually throughout the whole pitching staff. Once you get past Kane, right, you start to wonder, you know, is Bumgarner going to come out of what he's gone through in the last, you know, in the month of September? Lincecum has obviously been a fascinating and compelling question mark all year. But he's also the reason they won a World Series 2 years ago. So you can't discount him. Vogelsong looks great in his last couple of starts, but he hasn't been here before, ever. Zito has been fantastic in the last couple of months, but do you trust him? And how great would it be to see Barry Zito back in the postseason?
Yeah.
But I think I would say Pablo Sandoval has got to be a huge question mark because they really, really need him to produce. And as you remember back in 2010, he really got very little playing time, especially as the playoffs went on. They just didn't feel he was ready, that he was in shape enough to last into October. He wasn't producing the way they needed him to. And so he spent a lot of the 2010 playoffs on the bench, and they really need him to step up big, I think. I mean, you've got to have someone else with a hot bat besides Buster.
Same question to you, Marty Lurie. Comment first on the Zito question, because there's another fascinating, of course, tie between A's to Giants. And in many ways, you could make the argument that, Zito was the most reliable of the Giants starters over the last month of the season.
Well, they've won his last 11 starts. He's been terrific. And Ken knows this, and Ann will remember it too. He looks like the Barry Zito of the Cy Young year. He's pitching with confidence. He's got the ball where he wants it to go. He's got a cutter that's getting in on people. He's really pitched in a great way. I think he's going to be a part of this, and I think you have to trust him. He's earned the trust of the ball club. The key for me, it's the bullpen, because this is bullpen by committee. This is something unprecedented that is happening in today's game. They have to have four pitchers who are on just about every day, and they can't burn them out early in the series. It's Affelt and Casilla in the eighth, turning it over to Lopez and Romo in the ninth. That is going to be the key for me. Left-handed relievers, you've got to deal with Jay Bruce and Joey Votto, but Bruce Bochy is a matchup guy, so you have to have that. So that's not the number one key for me. In today's baseball world, the pitcher doesn't go nine. So we know the bullpen is going to have an effect, and the Reds have the Cuban missile. Aroldis Chapman, who throws 100 miles an hour and has had just an amazing season, but they got to get the ball to him.
Ann mentioned Sandoval as someone to keep an eye on. Is there someone you're keeping an eye on who might be not sort of tip of the tongue?
Well, I think she's right about the number three hitter. But the key for me is who's hitting behind Buster Posey. Dusty Baker's a very smart man. Chris Spires, bench coach, they know how to do this. Brian Price, the pitching coach. They're not going to let Buster Posey beat them. Hunter Pence and Xavier Nady. Now, Nady's 5-for-8 with a homer off of Cueto. I would hope he's in there tomorrow. But the people behind Posey have got to do the job, or he will not see a pitch to hit. And then again, it's Pagan and Scudero getting on ahead. It's the old Barry Bonds story. If you get people on ahead of him, then they can't walk him. So that's the second part for me. Get on ahead of Posey so they have to pitch to him.
Marty Lurie, the pre- and postgame host for the Giants on KNBR 680, joining us along with Ann Killian and Ken Korak, the play-by-play announcer for the A's. We welcome your calls and questions about postseason baseball. It's a special time, 866-733-6786. Let's go to a caller. Melissa joins us in Oakland. Melissa, go ahead.
Oh, hi. You know, I sit in the fever pitch, in one of the fever pitch sections of the Coliseum, and, you know, with ticket holders that have been there since the Coliseum was open, and in terms of, you know, will what the A's is doing have done make any difference? You know, we sit, down the row from Lou Wolf, and when he was interviewed after Tuesday night, I really feel like he had nothing to say. He's probably thinking, oh, now I'll never be able to move them out of here, you know? It's up to him, ultimately, if the A's are going to be any better than they are than we see them now, or any better than they were when they won the World Series in 89. You know, it's just, it's sad, frankly, because I sit with people who are real fans who come from hell or high water in the rain, in the heat, and we have an owner that really...
Yeah.
Just has another agenda. Also, too, just one more thing. I think the real unsung hero this year has been Brandon Inge. And I think journalists haven't spent enough time getting him, you know, giving him enough credit. And he came in and hit a couple of home runs and said, this is how you do it, you guys. This is how you do it. Don't be afraid. This is how it's done. And now he's injured, but he really started something that I think we wouldn't be where we are without him.
Melissa, thanks. Let's pick up on the Inge comment, and then we'll go to the ownership and A's question. But Ken Korak, Inge was someone and who played. Tell the story of his last game and his injury and everything, and whether or not that did sort of set the tone for who the A's became.
Well, and he's a tough guy, and I think when he joined the A's, and it's ironic that we're sitting here playing against the Tigers, and they let him go early in the year, and he was a big part of the A's being here to play the Tigers in the Division Series. When he first joined the A's, he took over at third base at a time in which the A's weren't hitting at all. Their offensive numbers were abysmal, and he hit a grand slam in one of his first games, hit another grand slam against the Tigers, the next day against the Tigers, hit a three-run home run, and so he really sparked the offense at a time in which they weren't hitting at all. And I think he does deserve maybe some of the intangible credit along with someone like Gomes, because a tough guy who really inspired his teammates, I think, in the clubhouse. He hurt himself in Chicago diving for a ball down the line, popped the shoulder back in and then got a base hit in his next at bat. So the caller, she's certainly right that in many respects, he embodies the spirit of the team.
And, Killian, you
now,
wrote...
he's not going to play. Now, he's out for the
right,
year, so
right.
He's not going to be able to play. He had surgery a couple of weeks ago.
And, Killian, I think there's a book in this. You just wrote a book about the women's soccer team. I mean, if you think about this improbable story and this extra fascinating layer having to do with the city of Oakland and all it contends with and an ownership that doesn't want to be there, I mean, there's quite a story to be told.
There is. And, I have pretty strong feelings about this because I think that what the ownership of the Oakland Athletics has done has been criminal. I mean, I think it's horrible. They have deliberately driven people away from the Coliseum. And I think that anyone who looks at the sparse crowds earlier and says, look, there isn't any interest, you know, why would you invest your money, your time, your energy in an owner who basically is raising his middle finger to you at all times? Why would you get connected to players who are going to be traded away as they've done over and over and over again for the last few years? There is a hardcore fan base for the A's, and I don't blame them for not showing up en masse. I mean, they are now because they can't resist any longer.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, sure, if you looked at the Bay Area today as it is right now and said, I'm going to place two baseball teams in the San Francisco Bay Area, where should I logically put them? Sure, maybe you'd put one in the South Bay because there is a lot of population there. We aren't starting from scratch.
And you wouldn't put one in Detroit, probably, either.
But we're not starting from scratch.
Right.
We're talking about a team with an incredible history, an incredible connection to the city of Oakland. You know, some of their greatest players were raised in the city of Oakland.
Yeah.
And I just,
Ricky Henderson.
You know, I really feel strongly that the way they have approached this, I don't want to see them be rewarded with the rights to San Jose for their horrible behavior, and it would be a reward. So I'm really fascinated to see how this plays out, but it is another, you know, there is a villain in this story, and oddly, it's the person who owns the hero team.
Marty Lurie, you want to chime in?
It's a fairy tale. Really, this couldn't be written any better. And when they make the movie, and playing Bob Melvin will be Philip Seymour Hoffman again.
Who plays Lou Wolf?
No, I say Art Howe comes back to play Bob Melvin this time. They'll do it right. But Ann is exactly right. There's such a history of baseball in the East Bay. These fans are like Candlestick fans.
Yeah.
They're great.
And the team sort of fits the city.
Ken said it. It's a blue collar team. They go out and play baseball. Nothing bothers them. It's really a wonderful baseball story. And I love the Brandon Inge story. When he came over, and you can look it up, that's when this team started playing well, and he had a lot of big hits. A
couple of comments on our website. Major League Lou writes in, presumably not Lou Wolf, this is Oakland baseball at its best. Scrappers and scratchers with everyone picking each other up. It isn't the 2006 team with Mulder or Zito or Hudson. It's 2012 and they're winning despite Lou Wolf. The only thing that would make this better would be if Marco Scudero were still on the team. Paul writes in a comment on Bartolo Colon. If he gets to run through his 50-game penalty during the playoffs, will the Oakland A's take him back? Ken Cork, do you know, and the Giants have said that Cabrera isn't coming back. Have the A's said what they would do if Colon is eligible if the A's are still in the playoffs?
They haven't announced that yet. I had heard a report that he was throwing somewhere. He's certainly not with the ball club right now, and they would have to get pretty deep into this thing for him to be able to pitch for them, and I think that would be very difficult to do. There's really no place to go pitch right now and to try to simulate pitching in a major league game. So I would say it would be doubtful that he'd be able to pitch for the A's or that he would be pitching for the A's this year.
866-733-6786 if you have a question for Marty, Ann, or Ken, or you can email us your thoughts at forum@kqed.org. 866-733-6786. Yeah, Ken, go ahead. Yeah.
Because I think it's important to mention this. I think the A's need a new stadium. And, you know, I can give you several reasons why I believe that. And I'm someone who moved to the Bay Area in 1979. I used to buy a ticket and go to games at the Coliseum, and I loved the Coliseum. But I really think it was compromised as a baseball park when the Raiders came back
in Mount 1996. Davis.
With Mount Davis. So, you know, I don't know anybody who says the Giants would be better off if they were at Candlestick. Is anybody saying that right now? So I do believe, and I have a great deal of pride in the fact the A's are the Oakland A's, and I, you know, the most important thing to me is that the A's stay in the Bay Area, and I've said this from the very beginning. In a perfect world, if they could stay in Oakland, that would be great. But I think the most important thing from my perspective is that the A's really do need a new stadium, I think, as far as sustaining the viability of the franchise for the long haul. And you know, I don't think you can talk to anybody who's a Giants fan that would say, you know, I wish the Giants were still a Candlestick. And I'm not sure anybody in the media would say that either.
Good point, Ken. Thanks for adding that in. And we have someone who's joining us by phone now as well, Brian Calls. I hope I have that right, who is part of Save Oakland Sports. Brian, you've been part of the push to keep the A's in Oakland. Do you think their extraordinary story this year will help that effort?
I think it definitely helps that effort. I mean, what an amazing week out at the Coliseum this past week. And we're not advocating that the A's stay in the Oakland Coliseum, but that they, you know, build a new baseball facility in Oakland. And I mean, look at the crowds and the amazing support at the Coliseum this past weekend. Obviously, baseball can work in Oakland. You saw it. It was just crazy out there. Several of the upcoming playoff games are already sold out. There's a ton of demand. I've been over to the Coliseum a couple of times today and yesterday. There are lines at the box office. They go out to the parking lot. So,
but will this change anything? Is there any sense from either the city or from Major League Baseball that you have a better shot at building a stadium on Jack London Square or wherever?
Well, I don't know if you can say that three games of amazing crowds really changes the situation, and we don't know exactly what Major League Baseball is doing. They've sat on this for we're going on 4 years now of of nothing from Bud Selig. The thing that I think that this does, as far as the new stadium and helping us out in Oakland, is that it brings Oakland and the Oakland A's to the forefront of the discussion, and it really makes Major League Baseball look at the situation, and the rest of the country is going to see it now, play out in front of their eyes, and it's going to, I believe, probably force some sort of resolution.
Brian, thanks. Thanks for the perspective on that. And any sense of what in the world is going on with Major League Baseball and Bud Selig, the infamous committee studying all of this?
The Blue Ribbon Committee that doesn't seem to do a whole lot. Well, I think silence speaks volumes, in this case. I think that if this was going to be resolved by Major League Baseball, it would have been resolved. I think the Selig is not doing anything about it means he would like the Giants and the A's to sort it out amongst themselves, and he's not inclined to overturn the territorial rights. And, there's a lot of discussion about whether these territorial rights are even valid or what they actually mean, and, the Giants should just give them up. And I'm certainly not an apologist for the Giants, but I will say that they were awarded them, and then they went out and built their own ballpark with their own money. And that makes it an interesting dynamic because they built the ballpark with those rights in hand and the rights to all the corporations down there. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I think if there was going to be a decision by Major League Baseball, it would have already happened. So I think we're just status quo. And I think, if Lou Wolf and John Fisher, the invisible actual owner, think that they're don't think they're going to get San Jose, they might as well just sell the team then to someone who wants to be more proactive in the city of Oakland.
Let's get back to some baseball questions coming in on some of our emails and web questions. Steven writes, I'd like to know from Marty if he thinks batting Buster number 3 before Sandoval would actually be better as a way to set up the Giants lineup. That might prevent other teams from walking Buster, would it?
Well, you still have Sandoval hitting behind Buster, and so Sandoval's got to hit. He's a key. And clearly he's had a little bit of a better couple of weeks now. But no, I think at this stage of the season, they're not going to manipulate the batting order. Posey stays fourth. Sandoval becomes very important in the three spot.
Antoine writes in, I'm very glad that there's mention of the manager getting what Oakland is about, because as a fan, I feel that this team is very much an Oakland team, and I hope that Billy and the owner take another look at this whole thing and consider where they might have gone wrong. I think this season gives them that chance. Go A's! I think that we'll actually lose the first game in Detroit, but win the next three. There we go, an actual prediction. Ken, is this game that's tomorrow, because they're facing Verlander, if they lose, which is certainly possible given how good a pitcher Verlander is, the key is then game two and then get back to Oakland with a split?
Well, I think that'd be the great scenario for the A's, if they could get a split out here and then come home, and then they really have home field advantage. Now, this club has overcome a lot of obstacles this year. The first team in the history of the game to ever come back from five down with nine to play and win a division or even win a pennant. So if they were down 2-0, they have three at home. If they could win the third game, who knows what might happen. But you would love to come here and certainly get a split. Who knows? They might go 2-0. You know, it's almost impossible to predict what this team is going to do because, you know, Marty was talking for good reason about some of the obstacles that the Giants overcame. And, you know, the baseball season, 162 games, nobody's immune to some of the things that happen, you know, injuries and things off the field you can't account for, like Colon being suspended. You could have made a case that if the A's were putting together their ideal postseason rotation at one point this year, it might have been Bartolo Colon and Brandon McCarthy and Brett Anderson. They didn't have any of those three guys down the stretch.
Right.
So, you know, this, and they may have Anderson for game three. So overcoming adversity, I think, is something that's been central for both the ball clubs. So, the A's have every time that we've thought the A's have hit a bump in the road and maybe they would slip and maybe the story would end, they've answered all that in the affirmative so far this year. So who knows, maybe they can do some damage against Verlander. Last time they saw him, they got him out of there after six innings. And I think sometimes when you're facing one of the better pitchers, even if you don't do a lot of damage on the scoreboard against that pitcher, if you can get his pitch count out, maybe up, and maybe get him out of there fairly early. He threw 122 pitches in six innings here last time the A's saw him, and they took him out of the game. So that would be ideal for the A's tomorrow.
What are the prospects for both of these clubs moving forward? You did have the feeling, Marty Lurie, when you watched the A's in that game where they clinched the division last game of the year when Josh Hamilton dropped that fly ball, that there were higher powers involved here, yeah. that something was propelling them forward. I mean, do both these teams have a chance to get all the way to the Bay Bridge series? And then we'll get your view on that because you wrote about it this morning, Ann. But Marty, first on
no,
that.
No, absolutely. I say if you win the division series, I think both teams are favorites, in my mind, to get to the World Series. The Division Series is the toughest series that we ever see in baseball. Put your seatbelt on. This thing changes day by day, inning by inning. You could be down 2-0. You win the third game. Now it's 2-1. You come to the fourth game, say, all right, we win this game. Then we'll have a fifth game. This one is never over till it's over, as Yogi Berra said. And I'll give you just a small example. In the Jewish religion, there's a prayer that's called Kaddish. You only say it after someone dies. In the five-game series, it's not over until you say Kaddish. And believe me, this thing is, put your seatbelt on, it is going to change day by day. But Ken is right. You get Verlander out and you get into that Tiger bullpen, good things can happen. Same thing in this Giants-Red series. You get the starters out, and it becomes a game of bullpens. That's the determining factor. This five-game series, anything can happen any day.
And you wrote this morning about the prospects for a Bay Bridge World Series. What do you think? Is one team more likely than the other to make it to that stage?
Well, I guess right now, if I had to say one team was more likely, I'd fall on the side of the A's because I like teams that surge into the postseason with momentum and, you know, just don't even have time to think about it. The Giants, the last time they clinched really early and they had the best record in baseball was in 2003, and they lost to the Marlins in the divisional series. So they, you know, they needed rest. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But sure, after today's wild card play, you know, one-game wild card games, each team has a 25% chance of getting to the World Series, so why not? You know, I'm sure the Baltimore-Washington folks are hoping that they have I don't know, what would you call that, a Beltway World Series? But I think It would be a lot of fun. It would be a lot of fun for all the reasons we've talked about. I mean, these teams now have kind of different personalities. The Giants are much more mature and businesslike, and the A's are kind of what the Giants were a couple of years ago, kind of wacky and nutty and just riding the wave. But it would be fun. I mean, it's been, you know, 23 years. Why not time for another one? And you know, the Bay Bridge isn't quite done after it was damaged 23 years ago, but we could still handle it.
And Ken, what's your thought on this question of momentum that Ann was referring to? The A's, if ever a team had momentum, the A's have it. Does it matter in baseball? Is that where you sort of would place your bet?
Well, the old cliche about momentum in baseball is that it's in the hand of the starting pitcher in that game, so it only goes so far. I think the A's have a lot of belief in themselves. I think confidence may be more important than momentum. You do want to be playing well coming down the stretch, but one of the ironic things about the way this worked out is that the Tigers, on paper, at least based on their record, are the weakest of the five teams in the American League in the postseason, yet they were the one that clinched the earliest, and they got to really set their rotation, kind of rest their guys coming down the stretch. So we'll have to wait and see. I do think the A's have a lot of confidence. I'm glad they only had 2 days off. I thought when the A's went into the 06 American League Championship Series against the Tigers that they lost some of their momentum because they had a fairly long wait because the A's had swept Minnesota in the division series. So I think they needed these 2 days off. So I think they'll be ready to play. I think it's a tough matchup. I think the Tigers have great pitching. But, you know, I think I'm the world's worst prognosticator. I just really enjoy, as Marty has always said, the book, the pages turn every day, and we try to chronicle, you know, what goes on. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's very special for a team to be in the postseason. You think of there are clubs around baseball that haven't even been in the postseason for 15, 16, 18 years.
And, so, Ken, I'm going to hold you there because I want to let Marty get in a last word on prospects and what he thinks is going to happen.
Well, I think they're two tough series. I really do. I think the toughest thing for the A's are a strikeout team, and they're facing pitchers who like to strike you out. That's their biggest obstacle. And for the Giants, they didn't pitch that well these last few weeks, and pitching means a heck of a lot in the playoffs. I think the Giants are going to have a tough time with the Reds.
Does it hurt him that they clinched so early, that they were sort of on cruise control the last part of the season?
No, these pitchers needed a rest. This has been a long emotional season for them, Lincecum especially. They've pitched close to 1,000 innings for the starting pitching, basically the guys who are going to pitch here in the playoffs. They needed a week or two off just to recharge. Let's see how it turns out. And it's going to be a game of bullpens, Dave.
Giants take the Reds, A's take the Tigers?
Giants take the Reds, I think the Tigers take the A's. And I'm just saying that, Ken, don't get upset.
We'll leave it there. Marty Lurie, the pre- and post-game host for the Giants on KNBR 680. Marty, such a pleasure. Thanks for being here. Ann Killian joined us as well from the San Francisco Chronicle. Ann, thank you.
Thank you.
And Ken Korick from Comerica Park in Detroit. Ken, thanks so much. Good luck. Hope it goes great.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
This is Forum on KQED. Go Giants, go A's.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.